Roxo Media House.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. I have alongside with me my friend, my co-host, Parker Fleming. Parker, first question, did you watch the World Cup final on Sunday?
I did not because I'm a good person and I was in church, so I didn't watch it. Realistically, I just don't care very much about soccer. Like, it's cool. I saw that it was like a hat trick or whatever and saw that. I'm just not knocking anyone for watching it or caring about it. It's just not something that's super on my radar, especially when the U.S. is not good at it.
Well, thank you for torpedoing the bit that I had planned for this. So that's totally fine.
That wasn't a very first... yes and. That was not a very good
yes and. That's the worst improv we've ever had.
Let's start over. Hello and welcome to the Purple Theory Podcast. Grant, did you watch the World Series or the World
Cup? Yeah, I actually did. No, I didn't watch the World Series. I watched the World Cup. I was at a beer house
at 3 a.m. on Sunday.
Shout out Daniel Negreanu. He's the best poker player of all time. I love Daniel Negreanu. I was at a beer house in New Braunfels, Texas. Watched the first half, hopped on the road, listened to the rest on the radio. Hell of a game. God bless Lionel Messi. That's fine. We can move past that bit to move to my second bit before we get into this podcast. Lil Wayne is the guest on the Madden cast as we record tonight. As we record tonight on Monday. Parker, what is your favorite Lil Wayne song?
Dude, I mean, one, there are no undertones to this whatsoever. This is strictly about Lil Wayne and not rappers in general.
Yeah.
Can that man complete a sentence?
No, not at this point.
I don't think he can. I think it'd be very fun to watch him. My favorite Lil Wayne song is a great question because, the Carter 4, I think, was what came out like my senior year of high school.
That adds up, yeah.
And so that was very much...
It might have been 3. You're very old.
I am super old. Hold on, let's find out. You're going to find out how lame I am while I try and figure out which album came out at the right time.
Are we talking Let the Beat Build, a Millie, or like President Carter, 6 foot, 7 foot?
No, it was 3, not 4. 4 was 2011.
That old?
I was in college. Oh, I'm super old, man. Yeah. You and Matt were talking about graduating the other day on the podcast. I was like, nope, I was gone. I was very much gone.
Very interesting. Okay. My party trick is that I know all the words except the ones that I can't say to a Millie. But I'm going to ride very hard for Let the Beat Build, which is also on the Carter 3 around your era of the.
Yeah, I'm into that. I'm trying to think about like the high school pump up playlist I had, which had a Millie on it, which had
Hustler Music would have been the Carter 2. Yeah.
The Carter 5. Hold on, we're getting there. The answer is, this is how lame and suburban I am. My favorite Lil Wayne song is Forever by Drake with everybody on it.
You know what? That is LeBron James' crowning legacy, is that that song was on the LeBron James high school documentary.
Dude, that song's
great. The best thing he's ever done.
It's a great song. Okay, this is very confusing on Spotify because I have the Carter 5, but then I have the Carter 5. They're just, you can't even scroll through the discography anymore. I don't know what I'm doing here. My favorite Lil Wayne song is Bedrock by Young Money.
Oh, crap. Down by Jay Sean, where he has the guest verse. That was my sister's favorite song for a long time.
Oh, honestly, that one's not bad.
It's a really good song. I you know what? He intros Make It Rain with Fat Joe. And I don't remember, because I know you were a big football guy growing up, as I was. Do you remember the Cody Paul highlight mixtape?
I don't think so. I don't think that's on my radar at all.
Cody Paul was a 9-year-old kid in California who had the greatest, like, Little League football mixtape of all time. And it was set to Make It Rain by Lil Wayne and Fat Joe. And my friend and I watched the hell out of it. Also, there's a great ESPN article about Cody Paul. He turned out to be 5'8", so he didn't make it pro. But highly recommend the video. Parker.
Wait, no, I'm still on this. Hold on. My least favorite Lil Wayne song is Prom Queen. I don't know if you remember
that one. Oh, it's very bad.
He, like, made, like, an emo song And then there was that one, was it with David Guetta or something? That's not right, but he's like the Let It Rock.
Oh, Let It Rock's a good song. Screw
Kevin
you.
Kevin Rudolph.
That's a good song.
No, I was joking about the prom. I was saying like the prom king was bad. Let It Rock was on my pump up mix for sure. Like okay, I'm very much in that. That's great.
Yeah. Let It Rock rules. Yeah. Anyway, this podcast is brought to you by Frogs Today. I'm sure they'll love that plug at this point. Parker, we are going to talk about the Michigan
Wolverines. The official TCU podcast of Lil Wayne. We are going to talk about the Michigan Wolverines.
We're going to talk about the Michigan Wolverines offense. We have a couple of house cleaning duties to do just to talk about a little bit of news. We will start with Max Duggan going pro, which, hell yeah, dude. Like, this podcast is a get that bag podcast, so for sure do that. Also, like objectively, this is the highest he'll ever be in terms of draft stock, probably. And he's given 4 years of his life to the TC Horned Frogs. He graduated a couple weeks ago. I'm very happy for Max Duggan. I hope I don't expect him to be a great professional quarterback, but I hope he goes like the Chad Henne route and lands on a roster for a complete decade.
Yeah, I'm very excited for Max Duggan to make a roster. I think that would be a great achievement. And again, I think we need to put in perspective what great is, right? In terms of college football to NFL, making a roster is no small deal, especially for someone who has been besmirched and maligned and talked down about for so many of his years. I mean, very, very publicly, a prominent TCU alum who was a draft pick. Said some terrible things about him to try and bump his draft stock up. And so like Max Duggan going to the league is just a great FU to the haters in reality. I think the biggest thing there is yes, absolutely. There's nothing can happen next year. If he didn't make the Heisman podium this year, sure, maybe you run it back. But I think that you see you're losing the wide receiver core, or at least you're losing QJ. And saying like, hey, there's just there the probability of me having a better season than this is zero, or close to zero. And I'm gonna go try and get a first contract and get some life-changing money and work hard and be a football guy and stick around for a couple of years in the league and make some money there. So absolutely go get the bag. It's so great to see our young son all grown up, reaching his potential, and we're very happy about that.
I think I'm not going to use the adjective that I almost used. I think his statement, his open letter was extremely touching. I'm just very happy for the guy. I hope he gets drafted. Hope he lands for a while. Hope he makes millions of dollars because God bless him. He deserves it. It's absolutely the right decision on his end. And he's still going to play the bowl game against Michigan and also the –
Yeah, I don't know why final. There was any.
He made it very clear.
Willful ignorance about that, or maybe wishful thinking about that. But very clearly, what he was doing was helping out TCU again, because he's the most unselfish player at TCU in history. By making his intentions known in a time frame that would allow TCU to pursue recruits and portal entrants with a clear vision of what the path to playing time looks like.
He deserves everything. I'm sorry. I want to talk about Max. It's very gushing.
Can I just cast an eye to next year very, very quickly?
Yeah, please.
Start, bench, and cut is the diplomatic way I'll say that.
Yeah.
Devin Leary, Hudson Card, Brennan Armstrong. Those are just portal quarterbacks. I just want to say I don't have any intel about what's happening there. I'm just saying there's some portal quarterbacks. TC might look at them. Talk to me.
Start Hudson, bench Brennan, cut Devin.
I don't really like Devin Leary very much. I think that's fair.
I love Brennan Armstrong, but I do think Hudson Card was a victim of a system. So we'll see. Also, Sam Jackson was not in this.
No, but I was only talking about.
I know.
I will say we were. I'm going to take a victory lap here, and then you should rein me in. But like, we were very right about Texas's problem being, hey, the offense is really hard to install. Because I was like, both quarterbacks were just very much having trouble with the offense. overall. And so I feel very good that that was our complaint.
We were also very early about 2023 TCU quarterback Hudson Card. I think it's been a running bit on this podcast for
a while. Dude, I have receipts. Hold on. I think I went back and liked this because someone sent it to
You're
me.
You're not
going to
pull up your receipts. Don't.
No. I'm just saying I tweeted the Hudson Card is going to have a great career at TCU like 18 months ago.
Okay. Over, under. And by that, I mean terms of better or worse. Hudson Hard versus Kenny Hill. Just call him Hudson Hard. Hudson Card versus Kenny Hill.
Hudson Hard is that's Hudson a different Card's guy. Older brother, his alternate personality.
Hudson Hard, there's videos for that. Hudson
I was
going to
make
versus,
a joke, but we're not going to mention a certain podcast twice in a
All
row.
Right. Better or worse?
Dude, I think I'm rolling with Kenny. I think that you could do a lot with him. Yeah. I think Kenny Hill was underappreciated, underutilized, especially looking back to what we know about TCU and their offense the last couple of years. I think I'd roll prime in their prime. I think I'd roll with Kenny, like both quarterbacks, right? If I had 2 years to work with them, I think I'd choose Kenny for sure.
Okay. Very interesting. Speaking of the transfer portal, we can officially announce as if we came up with it. JoJo Earl, former four-star wide receiver at Alabama, is now at TCU, which is very fun. I hope he I was talking with a friend of mine a couple weeks ago. Do you remember the name John D'Arce? D'Arce? I never learned how to pronounce his last name.
I do. John D'Arce had a great game in the after Isaiah Graham got murdered in the Liberty Bowl. John D'Arce had a really good run as the number one red receiver for TCU for a little bit.
Yes.
Never really manifested Isaiah Graham. His true potential.
Isaiah Graham, a name I haven't heard in years. He had a great pair of hands. He was, I think he was one of the most sure-handed receivers, D'Arce, that we saw. But JoJo Earl, very excited. 5'9.5", 170. Probably going to play in the slot, I would imagine. But
84% in the slot this year, but only 15 targets all season. Was injured before this season. Never really acclimated back in there. And so, Grant, what the haters will say, those haters will say, well, there's a reason he's leaving Alabama. And I think that there is a reason he's leaving Alabama. He does not feel that he's going to get the opportunity to work out his injury and claim some target share. Mm-hmm. And I think that TCU is a place where he could absolutely seeing guys like Tay Barber and Darius Davis, both Tay Barber and Darius Davis, the offense was as much as you want to be involved, get involved. And if you get open, we'll get you the ball. And so I think it's a really great spot for him to come in and fill those roles. And kind of carve out a target share as he rehabs from injury in a lower pressure situation other than being the number one receiver.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I mean,
some might argue the only good receiver on like a kind of a bad Alabama receiver.
Yeah, there was a lot of really bad Alabama receivers this year. This is not a recruiting podcast. I've said before, and you'll have to be a listener for 3 years to know this. I really hate the business of recruiting. But since the last time that we recorded, TCU had 3 4 stars recruit commit to the program. Raiden Fontenette out of Freeport, Brassport, the ex. I'll ask Parker, do you know what Brassport's mascot is?
No, I do not.
The Exporters.
Mm.
They used to be in Bay City's division.
How do they manifest that? Is there like a
Freeport's
a
big port
on the sidelines? Or
well.
No, I understand. I understand a port and export. I get the
I love a good Art Van derivation no, that
of the word. I'm asking, do they have an exporter mascot on the sidelines?
Yeah, they do. Basically,
freaking nerd. Well, Parker, it's not, you see, port Kramer and export are the same words because they ship right things out of okay these.
Braden Fontenette is a 6'1.5" safety. We have Jamel Johnson and Arlington Seguin. Who is another safety, 6'1", 185, and Channing Canada, who I don't think is related to Cody Canada from Cross Canadian Rag League, but I can't rule that out, who is at Trinity Valley Community College from Athens, Texas, 6'1", 185 cornerback. So shoring up the back end there in the last couple of days. So that's very fun.
Yeah, good players, and we've seen the advantage of TCU at the top of the development cycle. Again, I've said this till I'm blue in the face. TCU came into the season with the third most talented roster by a long shot in the Big 12. TCU is poised to have by far the best recruiting in the Big 12, especially as Texas and Oklahoma transition to the SEC. And talent matters. We know that. Also worth noting, yep. Grant, did you see that map that I think Texas High School Football Life or something tweeted out where it was like, here's all the state champions from this year for in Texas high school football. And they are all like North Central Texas. No South, there's no West, there's nothing. There's all North Central.
Yes. And as a former Texas football, both fan and reporter, I'm very mad that Refugio did not win. Which is a South Texas school. But yeah, every single school in North Texas won. Duncanville finally shook the burden off their back and beat Galena Park North Shore. Shout out Reggie Samples. We don't have to get into that. His son is now at Arizona State with Brian Carrington.
Good for them. I don't begrudge either of them for like going through their path and hanging out. Like, that's awesome, man. That's great.
Yeah. Enjoy the desert. Parker, let's talk about the Michigan offense.
Let's do that. What an offense it is. Michigan Wolverines. Oh, go ahead, please.
Yeah. No, I was going to ask you, can we do vibes first before we launch into the
let's do vibes for
just for a brief. I know it's a power spread. I know it's I'm not sold on it. It's as beefy. Much as I am the Michigan defense. It is hella beefy.
Can I just read you some names for a second?
Sure, please.
It's beefy. Yeah.
Please.
Colorado State, Hawaii, UConn, Maryland, Indiana, Michigan
State. You're talking about bowl eligible UConn.
Nebraska. I'll have a bone to pick with UConn. I won't do it here. I'll do it on a Bet US show tomorrow. Son of a gun. Win that game. Don't even just cover. Win that game.
No, don't win it. They suck. You know
this. They outgained Marshall.
I watched the game. Opportunities. It was embarrassing. 0 points. It was embarrassing.
And stupid turnovers, and they still had the chance. Nebraska, Rutgers, Michigan State, Indiana, Maryland, UConn, Hawaii, Colorado State, Purdue. Grant, Michigan ain't played nobody.
Michigan has played nobody.
Penn State. We're going to do schedule review and everything, but you got Penn State, Ohio State, and I will give Iowa's defense their props, especially if we're talking about offenses overall or defenses overall. But I'm going to say that Michigan has played bully ball against some very bullyable defenses this season.
They're also starting like two quarterbacks, like for the first two or three games. Yeah.
They're moving around.
Yep.
And the good defenses that they faced, you've got Illinois, they only scored 19 points. Iowa, they scored 27. Like, those are really the only two, like, living, breathing defenses. And I think that Iowa game, am I wrong? Did they have a special team score?
I do you think I watched the Michigan-Iowa game? I hate myself, but not that much.
They finished 3 in touchdown. Yeah, they had a 28-yard touchdown there after a turnover on downs when they were up 20-7. Gotcha. So that's artificially inflated as well. So not saying they're not good. I'm just saying this perceived dominance, it's kind of like what Baylor does when they're good, where it's like Baylor last year scored 900 points.
It feels like a pot shot, I'll be honest with you.
No, but it's like they scored 900 points against, like, you know, Incarnate Word and Duke and Texas State or whatever.
Yeah.
Or Texas Southern. And you're like, okay, that's good. Like, they're doing well. But then everybody gets this perception of like, oh, they're amazing. And then they go play everyone on their conference schedule, like, close. And somehow I beat all these really bad teams by a lot kind of sticks and colors your perception of all those things.
Yeah. I know there are a lot of weapons on this offense. Obviously, Blake Corum being out for the rest of the year is a detriment. But I just still think that they aren't as potent as what their numbers may show. So with that, Parker, I'm transitioning to a segment.
That was a great setup. That was a great
setup. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think it would be better if once we'll officially graduate to good setups when we stop talking about how good they are. But we're getting there. I think.
Well, I'd like to call out for all my friends that listen how good I am at setting up segments. So, I mean, that's just kind of the plan. In 2025, this podcast is going to be humming. Michigan,
Yeah.
is 10th in offensive success rate. They're 14th in defensive success rate, but we'll get to that when we record the episode that comes out on Thursday. First in net points per drive. 19th in EPA per pass, which is honestly surprising considering what I've seen out of JJ McCarthy this year. 8th in EPA per rush, 7th in echo rate. You can finish the rest. I mean, but just tell me kind of what's that stand out to you out of this whole ordeal?
They are the inverse of TCU. TCU okay. is barely stay ahead of the chains and then get a shot play touchdown, right? Okay. You want to change the game with a home run. And Michigan is bunting for singles every time. They're just hitting, they're just chipping away. And with Corum, they'd get some big plays, right? Blake Corum had, make sure I want to say this. This is
okay. We'll get to that. I disagree, but that's fine.
Blake Corum had 10 plus yard runs. He had 21.
He had 36 of them.
What am I looking at? Oh, I'm looking at 2021. That's embarrassing. Oof. He did have 36 of them. So he could get you, some big runs. But again, I would suggest that a lot of those came against bad competition. And that wasn't necessarily the way, like, I don't think you get too much credit for like having 8 runs of 10 plus yards in an absolute blowout against Penn State. So
we'll get to the Penn State game in a minute, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Overall, this is a team that's very balanced. They're very run heavy. They're very much old school football. I want to establish the run. Their offensive line won the Joe Moore Award for best offensive line. They've won 2 or 3 more awards, probably deservedly so. They're 115th in rush rate over expected, Grant, 88.4 percentage points more. So any given situation, Michigan is 8.4 percentage points more likely to run than any other team. They're generating quality possessions on almost 70% of their offensive drives. That's 7th. And they're finishing them at a rate of 4.6 points per quality possession, which is 21st overall. So very good, very balanced. The last thing I look at in terms of balance overall, 15th in early downs EPA, 19th in third and fourth down success. So it's not like they're just getting by on the skin of their teeth on one side or the other. They're very balanced, very consistent, very 3 yards in a cloud of dust, kind of wear you down and then, you know, just go to the races once they're up, which we've seen them do in the second half a bunch this season.
If you had to label this Michigan offense, I have power spread, but I mean, how would you describe it?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of play action and a lot of inside zone. And then you get, you know, a couple, you know, 4 or 5 more kind of versatile routes there. I think power spread is fine to say here because they're going to put like 3 tight ends in and go jumbo and just run inside zone that way and say, hey, we're just going to push you and our running back is going to find a hole. I think that's totally fair.
I think I probably fell into the trap of anything that is primarily running a shotgun you call spread. But it's going to be, hey, there's going to be 3 tight ends. We're going to run out of pistol. We're going to run out of, you know, 7 men on a line of scrimmage, quarterback, running back, H-back, and a wide receiver split out wide. It is a very Big Ten modern offense.
They've done a good job of upgrading it over the years. I think a couple of years ago, it was a little more like bully ball kind of, we can't do anything. But
they had they had some rough personnel during that time at skill positions.
Yeah. They didn't necessarily have the guys that they wanted there. And like, even in 2021, Bell got hurt very early on, I think. Yeah. Right. And so maybe some vision, implementation, all of that. But generally, this is a team you're going to see line up in a lot of different personnel groupings because they can go 5 wide. They won't go 5 wide, but they can go 5 wide. They can go 11, your typical ace. They can go 12. They can go 22. They can go 13. Like, they can do all sorts of things, putting these guys in there and giving you different formations. And the different formations isn't like, hey, we're confusing the defense so much as it is, especially with like the spill and kill thing about this. It's manipulating the defensive lineman to be in a certain way to try to exploit the second level, right? It's a lot more, again, chess match is such a cliche. I hate saying it, but it is a lot more of a chess match of how can we line up to maximize TCU's weaknesses on defense and push them and push into those weaknesses. Less so, hey, we want more bodies, and more so, we want to force your alignment a certain way so that we can push you.
So first and foremost, we talked about chess for like 5 minutes before we started recording. So I don't think you have to apologize for that. Second off, their offensive coordinator is Sherrone Moore, who was at who played for Bob Stoops at Oklahoma. You're giving me a look as if I'm wrong.
No, that name was just familiar. I was like, oh, I think I know that name from somewhere outside of the Michigan offensive coordinator. It was just familiar.
I'm 99% sure that's true. The look just made me worried. But yeah, I'm pretty sure he played for Bob Stoops at Oklahoma. And so he's been with Michigan for a bit. And he is now their offensive line coach and their offensive coordinator. And as you said, they mentioned, you know, the offensive line won the Joe Moore Award as the best offensive line in the country. That was both last year and this year. He definitely puts like a premium on blocking and on kind of establishing. Oh, I'm not going to use the cliche, but just on being a very good blocking team. And so
I think they would I think they would use the phrase, and because they have a talent advantage up front, they're able to do that. Of saying, hey, we're going to establish a run game. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of an admirer of him in terms of being like, all right, look, I learned under a guy who studied under the air raid. I took all the principles. We are now going to block the hell out of the ball and also like kind of incorporate a couple of things into a traditional Big Ten offense. So I think it's very entertaining as much as it is frustrating because some of the personnel bothers me. JJ McCarthy is one of them. But do you want to get into two specific players? We can start wherever you want.
Yes. Well, no, I think I want to go.
Go wherever you want.
I think I want to go where I want to go.
It's your world, Parker. We're just living in it.
I want to talk about a couple big picture things, and then let's talk about the specifics of moving the ball. So okay. A couple of things I'm worried about with them having such a dominant offensive line is like third downs. Because if you look on the whole, TCU's defense, 42nd in early downs EPA allowed, 43rd in third and fourth down success allowed. Michigan, again, 15th on early downs, 19th on third and fourth down. So Michigan's average distance on third down is 6.11 yards. One thing that I think is really interesting, their success rate on third down, so their conversion rate on third down, when they throw short of the sticks, so when they throw less than the distance to go and have to get yards after the catch, 42.9% success rate. When they throw the ball past the sticks on third down, 39.5% success rate. Why is that interesting to me? Oh, go ahead, please.
Sorry, I was going to do the Brian Windhorst. Why is that interesting to me? But also, for our listeners, the success rate means, especially on third down, you're getting a first down.
Just a conversion. Yep, just getting a first down. Okay. TCU's defense is 17.0% success rate short of the sticks.
That's not
so. Great. When you throw, that's good. No, TCU's defense.
Oh, sorry. Success rate allowing. Sorry,
you're holding opponents.
My bad. Yep.
But they're 42.9% success rate when opponents throw past the sticks on third down, which is not great.
No.
And so that tells me a lot of when TCU can create havoc and they can force a short throw, they're actually making tackles in space pretty well to stop the third down there.
That's where they're getting beat. And Mark Perry. Yeah.
Yep. Where they're getting beat is those deeper third down situations. We talked about, you know, how many times do we text in the group chat third and long this season? Because TCU will give those up. So that's something to watch for. I don't know that I have a prediction about what's going to pan out there, but saying 42, you know, what Michigan's good at is throwing short of the sticks and getting the ball across to a first down. TCU is really, really great at stopping them. I think it benefits TCU, even though they're worse at it, to make Michigan try and extend the ball downfield a little bit more and get these quarterbacks in a situation where they're going to have to chuck it. So that was interesting to me, that kind of split. Also, looking at Michigan's explosive plays, I just call this 10 plus yards. 76 of those were dropbacks. So pass attempts, could be a scramble. Most of those aren't scrambles.
Yeah.
And 54 rushes. So definitely, again, when you look at their rush rate being as high as it is, they're, you know, 60% rushes on first down, for instance. They are a lot more explosive. The run game is very much a cudgel with those only 54 first down or 10 plus yards, 76 through the passing game. So definitely TCU is a big deal there, is make sure the run game is not explosive and make them have to earn explosiveness through the pass game. Two other things that I looked at. One, play action. I think that they use play action pretty well, but only in certain situations. Check this out. 39.8% play action on first down of passes. 22.9% of second down passes are play action, and 7% of third down passes are play action. So very, very open situation is when they're mostly using play action there and saying almost, you know, four of 10 passes on first down are going to involve play action, which is absolutely what they should do in open football, making you respect the run and then trying to beat you with the pass.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'd love to see a scheme breakdown of how many of those are out of pistol. One out of every four dropbacks McCarthy has is play action. Not quite that, 23.9%, but I'm going to use this as an example game, if that's fine. I picked out the Michigan-Ohio State game just to be, hey, this is what Michigan wants to do, and they're also going to pull out all the stops. Do you think that's a fair example game?
Yes.
Okay, because this is the one I have. So if it's not, I got bad news for you. Using Bill Connolly's breakdowns of this, for example, 60.9% out of first down, run rate under pistol was 80%, and shotgun 54%, and red zone 71.4%. I think they like to bang the ball under pistol and then say, hey, listen, we're going to throw it when you least expect it. And so I think they take really good advantage of luring the defense in and throwing the ball over the top. I'm not saying anything new that you haven't said. I just think it's a something to watch out for this game. I've also been burned by pistol so many times as a TCU fan that I just think we need to freaking watch out for it. It's stuck in my brain.
Well, and TCU's defense, hopefully the tendency to align differently helps TCU, because they're 42.6 passing success rate allowed on first down, 35.7% on non-PA there. So pretty big split overall. First down play action, especially if they get a couple runs early, could be a way that Michigan just absolutely runs away with this game. If TCU doesn't have an answer for that, if TCU has to load the box to stop the run and they get beat on play action, that it could be bad. It could be bad. And that's, you know, every game, if you can exploit the one matchup, can be bad. But that's just something to look for, is how does Michigan do on play action on first downs? It's going to tell you a lot about how TCU's defense is doing that day.
Yeah.
Lastly, just, and then we'll segue into individual players. I don't know how we're doing on time. I didn't set a timer, so we're just rolling. 38.6% of their runs are inside zone, and they have a 54% success rate on it.
They're very good.
Then what's interesting is they kind of drop off like a huge gap after inside zone. They're very diverse in the run scheme after that. They run power 9.6% of the time for a 54.8% success rate, which with those bodies, it would be embarrassing if you were doing worse than more than half a more than every one of every two runs being successful. Duo, which is it's like split zone, but there's made up rules that make it something.
It's split zone duo. That's what it is. Yeah.
It's 8.4% they run it, but they have a 75.7% success rate. So very effective in duo, which is, again, I'll put it on me to tweet out something to say, hey, watch for this. But it's, you know, you isolate them and whatever. So I'm fine with that. I won't explain that on the podcast, but I'll tweet out a clip. Counter, they run 7.9%, way worse on that, actually, 40% success rate. And then a zone counter, they run 5.9% of the time, but a 50% success rate. So that's one staple inside zone. And then situationally, based on personnel, four pretty good run concepts that they're pretty diverse at. So they can throw five legitimate, very, very good run concepts at you out of multiple personnel, which is frightening, frankly.
So I think this is a good transition, excuse me, because I want to talk about the running backs first, if that's okay with you. I know Blake Corum is out. He had season ending surgery. Donovan Edwards scares me more than Corum would.
Okay. Well, here's the deal.
And I want to phrase this correctly so that I don't sound like an idiot, if you don't mind. I have not watched a ton of Michigan football this year. I've tried to go back and watch game tapes. I've watched the biggest games. I'm just going to read you stats, and you tell me why I'm wrong. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Donovan Edwards averages 7.5 yards per attempt. Blake Corum averaged 5.9. 3.64 yards after contact. Blake Corum was 3.36. And Edwards was about half the snaps that Corum played. He runs more zone than Corum did. Corum was more of a gap guy. Had exactly half the amount of 10 plus yard runs. He's more explosive. Why am I wrong?
This is great. I wasn't hoping for a stats lesson here, but we're gonna do it.
No, I'm not gonna give you. I'm just literally because I have not watched. I'm going by the stats that are available to me. So,
two things that stand out. One is the obvious one, right? Donovan Edwards has 6 touchdowns, right?
7.
Only
that's
in the
pedantic.
Rain. I was only going
that's,
regular.
That's
season.
Very pedantic.
Regular post. No, regular post. No. Let's get there. He has 2 against Colorado State and Hawaii. He has 2 against Penn State against an awful run defense, 2 against Ohio State, 1 against Purdue. Right?
Did he watch those touchdowns against Penn State? They were
I never watched
explosive.
He's explosive. I'm not saying he's not.
I know you don't watch the games. That's not the point.
Before Corum went out, he had 92 total rushing attempts on the season, including when Corum went out, right? Corum had 248. So that's those sample sizes are not going to have equal variance, and we can't compare the means because we don't know that that's a statistically significant difference, because 248 is more than twice the snaps there. And you look at the distribution of games that Blake Corum had touchdowns in. So Donovan Edwards' best games, right, were Penn State and Ohio State, arguably.
I'm sorry, I brought against the best two teams they played? Yeah.
Right, but also Blake Corum's best games were against Penn State and Ohio State. Blake Corum had 166 yards and 5.9 yards per carry, 2 touchdowns against Penn State. Against Ohio State, he didn't run because he was hurt. And so
it was not one of his best games, right? That's fine.
No. He had his best.
That's just the point for me.
I'm looking here. So I think that the distribution of or the differential amount of target or attempts there lets me believe that there's a selection issue with when Donovan Edwards was employed, that he was largely in garbage duty and was beating down a team that was already beaten down. It's not to say Donovan Edwards is bad. He is very good. But when we're looking at the aggregate stats, I can't look at a guy with 92 attempts and 7.5 yards and a guy with 240 attempts.
117 attempts.
I'm only using regular season. I don't care about Purdue. And then 5.9 yards per attempt there. So the just like if Donovan Edwards had 50 more rushes on the season, would you expect his average to be 7.5 yards per attempt, higher than 7.5 yards per attempt, or lower than 7.5 yards per attempt?
Slightly lower.
Lower, right? So there's some regression. There's some diminishing margin returns. And so you have to extrapolate. How do I project that out?
I feel like my dad is yelling at me.
Donovan Edwards is good. I'm saying he's good, but it's not like, they haven't. I'm a running backs don't matter guy, right? He's good enough.
I'm aware.
He's going to be fine. But it is a little bit worrisome to say a guy with fewer than half the attempts is better because of rate stats.
I don't think he's better. I think he's more explosive. That's fine.
That's fair.
We can move on. Do you want to talk about JJ McCarthy?
Do I?
Brock, the rich man's Brock Purdy.
Okay, you tweeted this. Sell me on this.
I just think JJ McCarthy is Brock Purdy with better weapons. I think they make the same mistakes, especially in short passes. You look at the Penn State game, which is obviously a short sample size, but the pick he threw that turned into a pick six, where he's rolling out to his right, he gets hit. He just like tries to dump it off, and it gets picked off by a Penn State player, runs it back. It's the most Brock Purdy play I've ever seen. You look at their stats, Brock Purdy from 2021, his average depth of target was much lower than McCarthy, 7.5. He is Brock Purdy with a bigger arm. McCarthy's average at the target is 10.4. But he just makes a lot of mistakes. He also can't throw the ball downfield. McCarthy is to the left better. Brock Purdy was to the right better. McCarthy's NFL grade is 115 to the left. Purdy's was 138.6 to the right. But they both have just very clear gaps in their capabilities. And I think he's just Brock Purdy that's slightly better, don't get me wrong, has a cannon for an arm and just has a lot of really good weapons around him that kind of mask his inability to perform. Under pressure, he is 30 of 60, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception, averages a target of 11.3 yards. In 2021, Brock Purdy was 47 of 95, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick, a dot of 10.3. He's just a little bit better Brock Purdy. That's who he is.
I think that's fair, especially if you're casting him as like a
system QB.
I'm going to get the guy. Yeah. I'm going to get the guys, the ball in the right spot. And I'm going to use these great weapons super well. So I think that's not unreasonable. I don't think he has anywhere near the propensity for disaster plays that Brock Purdy
does.
Did you
see that Penn State pick six that he threw? I hate to harp on this,
but he only has 2.6. Turnover-worthy plays on the season. So I'm not going to penalize him for one bad game or one bad throw. I will say you can be erratic and not be Brock Purdy erratic, right?
I'm a Max Duggan fan.
Yeah, but I mean,
I understand.
I don't think I'm not worried about like, oh, J.J. McCarthy is going to use his legs to extend plays and slice and dice the TCU defense. No. I'm not worried about that. His average depth of target is 10.1. He is very much going to say, I want a clean pocket, and I'm going to make the throws that you expect me to make. I'm not expecting a ton out of him. I think that the bigger issue will not be Michigan's wide receivers, which we should talk about here, against TCU's cornerbacks, but it will more so be, can the linebackers keep up in the pass game and can Dylan Horton get there to make him uncomfortable? Because under pressure, 24% of the time, only a 48.1% completion percentage. And so a pretty big drop off from his 69.1% completion percentage when he's kept clean. What's interesting about that, and a testament to their offensive line, 68.1% completion percentage when he's not pressured, 60.0% when he is, or blitzed, sorry, when he is blitzed. So a nice split there. Blitzing doesn't seem to have an inherent advantage on disrupting the pass game. Can TCU, with 3 and 4 guys in a pressure, disrupt him so he's not getting this clean pocket to just chuck these balls downfield to open receivers?
I mean, that's been the question for TCU all years. Can they get pressure with 3 or 4 guys under Gillespie's system? And obviously, you mentioned Dylan Horton. He's progressed tremendously through the course of this year. I just think that TCU's back end is going to be tested just because they can't commit 5 or 6 guys. They haven't been able to all year. So do you want to talk about the receivers? And I position there, but I'll let you finish your thought. I apologize.
No. I was just agreeing with you. It's like, again, it comes down to what.
Oh, well, in that case, please talk. Please keep talking. Yeah.
Michigan in the pass game. I don't know if I talked about run and pass EPA. I did 19th and 8th. They're 14th in passing success rate, 19th in EPA per pass. So a little bit less explosive than successful in the pass game, but that's negligible difference there almost between these guys. Target leader, Ronnie Bell.
Yep.
80 targets this season. So target leader with only 80 targets is a little bit low. They're pretty diverse in how they spread the ball around.
You also don't throw the, McCarthy's on limited targets, but if you count the Purdue game, which I know that you don't count the Big Ten championship, that's fine. He has literally double the amount of targets as the next leading receiver, who is actually Luke Schoonmaker, the tight end. 88 targets to Schoonmaker's 44. Bell lines up 60%. Out wide, 38.5% in the slot. Average that's a target of 11.3. So he's going for first downs. Cornelius Johnson is the guy that scares me. And I am 100% to our listeners basing this off of the Ohio State game. You want to talk about dynamic. The guy's an absolute freak when he wants to be. An incredible route runner. lines up 95.9% on why, and it's going to make life hell for, I mean, we can get into this. Do you line up THT on Cornelius Johnson? Do you line up, I don't know if you put over.
No, Cornelius. Because Cornelius Johnson's like 6'4", 200,
okay,
right?
So do not put THT. So Mark Perry? Look, is that the best bet?
I love our little ladder climbing spider monkey fierce cornerback
kings.
There.
We stand short kings on this podcast.
I don't want to see that. I would love for him to be on Ronnie Bell, who's only 6 foot, and have a little bit of a fighting chance there. Tell me why I'm scared of tight ends. I don't feel like a tight end has like destroyed us all season, but I'm just worried about it.
That's not true. Who's buddy from Kansas that had the incredible catch? Kansas State's tight end ate us up.
So I'm worried about tight ends. Like I like that they kind of have a legitimate three-headed monster, and then Roman Wilson's been pretty involved too.
Yeah.
But Schoonmaker makes me a little bit nervous there. Just in that he's been very consistent. He runs routes a lot, and he's averaging like 5.3 yards per reception or yards after contact on 7.5 ADOT. Like, he's just a big dude. He's rumbling, stumbling.
Because he's large. Listen, we've talked about this all year. We don't need to explain this to our listeners. But, like, when a tight end goes out for pass coverage, he's either being covered by a linebacker or probably a strong safety, free safety.
Or Mark Perry in this case.
Right.
Who's effectively a linebacker.
Right. And God love him. I love Mark Perry. But I don't want anybody on TCU's linebacking core or Mark Perry covering Luke Schoonmaker. So that's why. That's not the strength of this linebacking core and the safety core. And so we've seen TCU be burned by tight ends for the last 5 years. And now, even though the 3-3-5, I think, has alleviated a little bit of that, it's still not the strength.
Yep. I think so. I think that's definitely an opportunity, especially if we're going to buy into the physicality narrative, which I don't know that I totally am. I think that's overblown.
Well,
TCU's pretty stout. Like, Johnny Hodges and Jamoy Hodge are as physical as anybody, dude.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the back end of this TCU defense is very physical. But you mentioned Hodges and Hodge, Mark Perry, Abe Kamara, those guys lay some hits. That's not what I'm worried
about. Human hammer, Kamara. Yeah,
exactly. And any game, but even the Big 12 championship game against Kansas State, they were laying hits. They weren't covering anybody. But once they caught the ball, they were.
What my favorite game? Yeah. Well, now I'm going to say, do I know this? It wasn't the Baylor game because they were running.
Texas
Why am
was
I doing
up there.
This right now?
They were beating the hell out of Texas.
It was Texas. Okay, it was Texas. Where it was literally like TCU was able to do stuff with the defensive backs where they just said, Johnny Hodges and Jamoy Hodge, pin your ear backs and kill the man. Just go get him. And they were super disruptive. I actually think TCU will be able to do that, especially if it's like run coverage. And we're like, hey, play action, whatever. It's just, hey, go kill somebody. I think that actually plays into TCU's hands very, very well in terms of physicality, just because those two guys are big, big brutes. But all that to say, the physicality narrative would be, hey, you're getting just smashed by Donovan Edwards and these big Joe Moore winning offensive line. And then, you know, you also have to tackle Schoonmaker and Johnson in the open field as well. I think that's pretty worrisome. But I do think that there's a game plan where TCU's physicality actually is pretty competitive here against this offense.
So I think that's something we can talk about next Wednesday when we do like our actual game preview after we do Michigan's defense releasing Thursday morning. But I do think, like I said, I'm not worried about being physical. I'm worried about guys just getting open.
Yeah,
that's kind of the concern in the passing game. Do we want to talk about offensive
line? You know
who's
dirty in the passing game? I do want to talk about the offensive line.
But go ahead.
Donovan Edwards is low-key pretty dirty in the passing game.
I told you.
Only 21 targets.
Yeah, good.
But 11.1 yards per reception. That's kind of annoying. That's kind of annoying that is an option that they're definitely going to have a month to figure out how to get that in, get that evolved. Only 1.93 yards per route run, but for a running back, that's actually pretty productive.
And for a running back, his average after target is 9.6 yards. Like, he's getting downfield and catching balls. It's not one of those like Deuce Vaughn things where it's behind the line of scrimmage and okay, just going to make people miss. He's getting downfield.
Not that Deuce Vaughn didn't have a good game against TCU, but like the Kansas State won that game because Johnny Hodges was out and Kansas State could put their backup bowling ball of a running back and just extend the drives. They got a lot of short yardage there off of a big physical running back. And so I'm actually like the Mark Perry highlights there. It happened. That's fine.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Was going to get his right. That the explosive ceiling there, but in terms of the extending drives and taking time off the clock and punishing TCU, I'm blanking on his name because I'm a bad football watcher, but the backup running back who's much more stout was a lot more physical against TCU and kind of punished them in situations. So that's why I'd be worried about Edwards and this offense is like, it's going to be a lot more like that and a lot less like tackling Deuce Vaughn in the open field.
Yeah. Which TCU couldn't do.
No,
like I said, no one can do that. Offensive line. Tell me if I'm missing anybody who is hurt, because I'm a bad football watcher. Zach Zenter, Olegason, Olegason, Ulumatumi, Ryan Hayes, Trevor Keegan, and Carson Barnhart, I think, are the starting five for Michigan coming into this game.
Yes.
Is anyone injured? Did I miss?
Understanding. Okay. I don't think so.
Great. Golly, they are very good at playing football. They've only allowed 4 sacks all year. Only incurred, let me do the math here, quick math, 12 penalties all year. They're just freaking stout, man. Like I said, Sherman Moore was the offensive line coach and is also the offensive coordinator. So he is designing this offense to take advantage of the big bodies up front, and it works. It's very, very impressive.
And they hold up in pass protection well enough that McCarthy's unbothered. His time to throw is 2.86. Like, he's able to let routes develop. This is the strongest part of the Michigan offense by a long shot.
And it might be the weakest part of the TCU defense. I mean, shout out Dylan Horton, shout out Don Williams. The pass rush has not been the strong suit.
Yes, let's frame it as this. It will be interesting to see how the spill and kill works against an offense that's trying to move you and create space vertically, like create lanes vertically. Can TCU force a guy outside? Because if it comes down to Abe Kamara or Mark Perry in the open field or D. Winters in the open field, that's a different ball game than, hey, the center knocked Don Williams down. Like, honestly, I don't even like being a TCU homer here. If Dom Williams gets his butt knocked to the ground and grabs 2 jerseys every play, he's winning, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And so I think there's a lot of ways that TCU can be particularly annoying and saying, we're going to eschew the question of physicality entirely because Cooper and Dom Williams are just going to be annoying and be in the spot and clog it up. And then the linebackers and the safeties are going to have better angles to make tackles and we don't have to be as physical.
I think it's completely reasonable. If I'm being an optimist, I will say that I think J.J. McCarthy, he scrambled 19 times this year. He's not as great of a running quarterback as TCU has played, especially those that kind of dominate the Big 12. So I think the spill and kill, it will fit more of the contain and be able to kind of press down on the edges than you would playing a guy like, Skylar Thompson, whoever, kind of preventing that explosiveness in the passing game. In the running game, I'm still very worried. But
if I'm getting hype, I'm talking myself into this being the Texas game, right?
Like, yeah,
this is the Texas game, and if TCU just doesn't make mistakes, they can absolutely be in this game and hit a home run and have a chance to win it. I think that Michigan is better on both sides of the ball than Texas, absolutely. Sure. But in form and kind, we're kind of looking at similar teams there, I think.
Quinn Ewers or J.J. McCarthy?
Well, I was going to say, would you rather play a game in Austin at night on game day or at the Fiesta Bowl in the playoff? What, like, environment matters?
Fiesta
Bowl.
Fiesta Bowl. I think. Yeah, environment matters.
So maybe a more favorable environment for TCU. We know fans are going to travel, but that doesn't matter. It's just not going to be as hostile as Austin. So that matters. I've probably taken Quinn Ewers. He's having a rough year, but we know what he is capable of, and we know that offense is very hard to install and master, especially in less than one offseason.
I went to TCU post Rose Bowl, so I know you don't have the same experience. I think I know more people from Arizona that went to TCU than I do that are from Austin.
Arizona and California, certainly.
And California, like, for sure. But I have two very good friends.
I think the number is that TCU had like 1,900 applicants for the freshman class before the Rose Bowl. And the year after the Rose Bowl, they had like almost 19,000. Like it literally increased that much.
So a home field advantage for TCU. That's exactly what we're saying.
You heard it here first.
As if the Michigan faithful aren't insane human beings. Who we love, for the record. There's a dude who does like offensive clips. It's Wolverine. It's not Wolverine Fanatic. It's somebody
Space Coyote.
On YouTube.
Oh.
Well,
Space Coyote. I was going to direct people to Space Coyote, who's Please great. Do. Space Coyote BDS. He does Big Ten stuff, and he's got a bunch of recent threads on Michigan.
Oh, that's perfect. I thought you were saying Space Cowboy by Casey Musgraves, which is a fantastic song. Anyway.
Grant, some Parker. People have called me the Space Cowboy.
Some people call me Maurice. Is there anything about the Michigan offense we have not touched on that you would like to touch on?
Oh, I'm certain there's plenty of things we're underrating, but I think big picture, what we're seeing is an offense that is very comfortable running the ball behind their big, bulky offensive line. And the second you adjust, they're going to run play action and try and beat you over the top. They don't want to run gimmick plays. They're not about speed and space. They're about pressing their physical advantage and moving you to the point where they create conflict, create mismatches, and then exploit them.
Yeah. I've dumped on JJ McCarthy this entire podcast. I think he's matured a lot over the year. I think him kind of earning the starting role and owning that has been tremendous. Against Ohio State, he was fantastic, even though his receivers, especially Cornelius Johnson, were just running wide open. So I think that's a big advantage. We will talk about this more next Wednesday when we do our preview. Parker, this has been the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGallier, and you can find me on Twitter at Grant McGallier. It's spelled like it sounds with all those vowels. He is Parker Fleming. He is on Twitter at Stats of War. He is on the BetUS show today when you listen to this, and Wednesday doing a bunch of bowl previews. Oh, Parker, question I did not ask you. What has been your favorite bowl game so far?
Okay, the freaking...
Not emotionally. I know Marshall-UConn was your emotional favorite.
Okay, Marshall-UConn was just annoying because UConn had every shot to win that. I mean, UTSA Troy was infuriating, but it was really good. UAB Miami Ohio, honestly, was probably the best game so far for me. Do we have a moment to soapbox? You didn't watch the New Mexico Bowl, BYU SMU?
No, I was,
cause you were out. Yeah, you were out. Okay. So here's what happened. SMU drove and scored, to go 23-24 with no time left on the clock, maybe like 4 seconds.
Yep.
8 seconds. And they score. That's great. Good for them. Rashee Rice is not playing. They don't have their number one wide receiver. That's fine. Okay. They line up and there's timeouts traded back and forth between them and BYU. But then the penultimate lineup before the timeout was SMU motions to a diamond out, like a receiver, two receivers off the ball, and then behind, right? Got to throw a screen or something like that. And BYU takes a timeout. So SMU comes back and does the same thing. And Grant, I kid you not, this play was a bubble screen draw RPO. The plan was if the linebacker crashes, throw it to the back guy in the diamond, and maybe he'll have a shot to get in there with even numbers. Or if the linebacker stays out on the diamond formation, then Tanner Mordecai is just going to run it in even numbers. And two SMU linemen got beat. It was a moot point, but it was also like, at what point in your life has like Tanner Mordecai draw been a reliable go-to option? Like it's worked as a fluke once or twice, but I was just appalled by that. That was a very interesting game too. So I like that one a lot. There's been a lot of good football.
I'm glad to let you get that out. We are presented by Frogs. There's been an unbelievable amount of bad football, but it's still football. So I will watch it.
Indeed it is.
We are presented by Frogs today. As always, go to frogstoday.com for all your TCU insider needs. I think there's big news coming in the form of a video sometime later this week. We may have hinted at it at last week's podcast. We will be back Thursday morning to preview the Michigan defense. Until then, keep the faith. Go Frogs.
Go Frogs.